Welcome back to another deep dive. Today is Monday, March 30, 2026, and we're celebrating a brand new release that literally just dropped today.
Yeah, fresh out of the gate, and it's a fascinating one.
It really is, because, you know, usually when we talk about a forward-thinking or futuristic electronic artist, there is this, I don't know, this built-in expectation of relentless digitalization.
Oh, definitely. It's almost a sci-fi trope at this point.
Right. You just assume they're making these incredibly complex beats using advanced synthesis. They live entirely inside their software ecosystems. And, like, their ultimate goal is to abandon the physical realm entirely.
Yeah, to just upload their consciousness directly into the algorithmic cloud.
Exactly. But then you step into the world of an artist who actively despises nostalgia, someone who is violently pushing the boundaries of what electronic music can even be, and suddenly that entire digital cloud just evaporates.
Which is such a wild pivot.
It is. We are looking at a release strategy that is startlingly physical. And that contradiction is exactly what we're exploring today.
So we're diving into the brand new album, Intercelestial, by Record of Tides.
Yes, Intercelestial.
And to really understand this album, you have to understand a massive philosophical pivot from the artist. We are looking at a highly digital creator who rejects the past, yet somehow ends up releasing his newest, most futuristic album on a limited edition audio cassette.
Which, I mean, makes absolutely zero sense on the surface.
None at all.
But when you look at the artist behind Record of Tides, Sven Pieta, it starts to form this really brilliant picture of creative rebellion.
Yeah, so for a bit of background, Pieta is a multidisciplinary media artist from Mülheim an der Ruhr in Germany.
And multidisciplinary isn't just a buzzword here.
No, not at all. He's been operating for 2.5 decades across photography, video, sound, and computer-generated imagery.
Which is a crucial detail for later in this story. His visual work deeply informs his audio work, and the tools he uses for both shape his entire worldview.
Right, and musically, Pieta completely refuses to be boxed in. His style actively rejects standard categorization.
Yeah, he blends IDM with techno, post-hip-hop, avant-garde, and post-rock into this melting pot he calls post-genre.
And I think we need to pause on IDM for a second, because intelligent dance music is one of those terms that gets thrown around a lot.
Well, for sure.
But it fundamentally changes how you should imagine this album. This isn't your standard four-on-the-floor club music where the bass drum just hits on every quarter note.
Right. It's not just, you know, background party music.
Exactly. IDM is essentially electronic music that prioritizes texture, complex time signatures, and really glitchy cerebral sound design over a simple danceable groove.
It's music for the mind.
Yeah. As much as, if not more than, for the body. It relies on taking rigid electronic structures and completely fracturing them. It requires a tremendous amount of technical proficiency.
Otherwise, it just sounds chaotic.
Precisely. You need the skill to make it sound intentional.
And Pieta clearly has that proficiency. But what struck me most when looking through the sources, like his diary entries and his blog post, is his psychological relationship with that skill.
He's very self-aware about it.
Extremely. He writes a lot about the modern art world. He talks about the absolute isolation of doom scrolling, the anxiety of social media, and his fierce refusal to just be a random guy feeding content into an algorithm.
There's that one story he shares about a current trend where an artist was taking Polaroids of other artists.
Oh, yeah, I remember reading that.
He admits that initially he really wanted to be included in that project just to feel validated.
Just be part of the scene.
Right. But then he had this moment of clarity where he realized it was entirely meaningless to his actual craft.
And that realization leads to a psychological concept he writes about, which he calls the consolation of potential.
Which is such a fascinating mechanism for anyone who creates anything, really.
It blew my mind. Okay, let's unpack this. Pieta possesses the precise sampling, arranging, and production techniques to be commercially mainstream, right?
Yeah, he fundamentally understands the math of a pop hook or a massive algorithmic dance hit.
But he finds profound happiness and genuine artistic freedom by actively ignoring prophets, followers, and critics.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it's about power.
Right. I was trying to wrap my head around why knowing you could sell out is so comforting if you never actually do it. It almost reminds me of like a Michelin star chef who has the skills to open a massive, highly profitable fast food empire.
Oh, that's a great analogy.
But instead, they deliberately choose to cook highly experimental fusion dishes for a tiny 10-seat underground restaurant. Pieta has a talent trust fund. He knows he can make a commercial hit, so he doesn't feel the desperate need to prove it.
Yeah, he just takes that commercial viability, leaves it in the bank, and uses that freedom to make highly experimental post-genre art.
The anxiety of creation usually comes from wondering, am I good enough to make what people want?
Exactly. But once you prove to yourself that you are, but decide you just don't want to make it, the algorithm loses all its power over you. You are no longer chasing metrics.
You're just free?
Right. And when you strip away that layer of commercial expectation, you create a very specific kind of mental vacuum. Which brings us to how Intercelestial actually came to exist.
Because if you aren't trying to make a hit for the algorithm, where does the spark actually come from?
It's a great question.
For this album, the spark required completely abandoning his studio screens. In the summer of 2025, Pieta takes a trip to the Dutch North Sea.
And he doesn't go there to work. This is a classic incubation period.
He's just chilling out.
Yeah, he spent his time at the coast mostly just enjoying albums by German electronica artists. He immersed himself in the music of others and let his own mind wander.
He just allowed the environment to wash over him.
Yeah.
But I have to admit, when I read this part of the story, I was incredibly confused by the output.
How so?
Well, he goes to this tranquil beach, stares at the calming waves, feels the ocean breeze, and comes back to make chunky, pumping, glitchy IDM and techno.
It does seem contradictory.
Right. You'd think a peaceful trip to the sea would result in an acoustic folk record or maybe some ambient drone music with, like, whale sounds. It feels like a total mismatch between the environment and the art.
It does, until you look at the mechanism of environmental contrast. The tranquil beach wasn't providing him with sounds to mimic, it was providing sensory deprivation.
Oh, interesting.
Think about it. When an artist like Pieta is in his daily life in the Ruhr area, his environment is loud, cluttered, and highly digital. His mind is constantly processing that noise.
So the beach was an escape from all that data.
Yes. When you place a complex, chaotic, highly active mind in front of an empty, calming horizon, that external silence creates a vacuum, and all those complex internal rhythms finally have the space to rush to the surface.
So the environment didn't dictate the genre, it just removed the mental blocks. It acted like a pressure valve.
Precisely. And the sheer volume of output proves how much pressure had built up.
Because when he returned home in August 2025, the music just poured out of him.
Yeah, he explicitly noted that he didn't even intend to start a new album right then. He thought maybe he'd slowly start something in the autumn.
But within 5 days, he had 12 tracks fully structured and waiting to be fine-tuned.
5 days for 12 tracks of complex IDM is just a blistering pace.
It really is. And this resulted in the 10th album in his ongoing purchases series, serving as the direct follow-up to his July 2025 album, On a Spectrum.
And you can see the direct fingerprint of that coastal trip right there in the track list.
Oh yeah, he takes these incredibly evocative, relaxing titles and attaches them to this massive, dynamic electronic sound. You have tracks like Nice Try and Super Dusk.
And that very specific thematic trio, the Beach Crate, the Beach Shop, and the Beach Motel.
Which perfectly subverts your expectations of what a beach song should sound like.
Absolutely. A review by Rodrigo Passananti actually captures this beautifully. He described the resulting sound as a richly immersive sonic universe, meticulously sculpted and thoughtfully conceived, that unfolds as a journey that expands the listener's perceptual horizon.
But getting an album from a rough 5-day burst of inspiration into a meticulously sculpted sonic universe doesn't just happen in isolation.
No, it requires friction.
Right, and this is where the story shifts. The genesis of Intercelestial happened at the sea, but bringing it to life required a vibrant physical community.
What's fascinating here is that it highlights a critical reality for digital artists. You need a local network.
For sure. For Pieta, that network is anchored heavily in the Electric Cafe Ruhr Collective.
Which is a tightly knit community of electronic musicians from the Ruhr area who frequently jam, produce, and perform together.
They provide that human friction that digital art desperately needs. He leans specifically on his longtime friend, Michael Schreiber, who works under the moniker Primal Scapes.
Schreiber is the ultimate trusted set of ears here. He mastered the album, bringing that final professional polish to the tracks, and even contributed visual material for the artwork.
There's also Mario Meyendrisch, also known as IG75. He collaborated directly on the track Brother Love, which feels like a very intentional nod to that deep-rooted connection within the regional scene.
But the most fascinating crucible for this album was the live test run.
Oh, this part is wild.
Yeah, having trusted friends give feedback in a studio is one thing, but testing complex, experimental electronic music requires a physical space filled with human bodies.
You have to feel it in the room. So on November 22, 2025, the Eunoia Space in Mülheim an der Ruhr hosted the Novembertronica Festival, curated by Alex Kupsch.
And Piotta was on the bill alongside artists like Shunsoke Oshio and Thomas Matoczek.
And he decides to use this live set to essentially test drive the raw material from his summer beach trip. He played live versions of completely unreleased tracks like Nice Try, Super Dusk, and The Beach Crate to an unsuspecting festival audience.
Which takes incredible guts.
I mean, can you imagine the confidence it takes to stand in front of a live festival audience and play unfinished tracks they've never heard? You are feeding them highly experimental music that you literally just poured out of your brain a few months prior.
But that vulnerability is exactly why it's necessary. When you are clicking a mouse and adjusting a synth parameter on a screen, you are completely divorced from the physical impact of that sound.
Right.
But when you drop a sub-bass frequency or initiate a complex polyrhythm in a room full of people, the air literally changes. You watch how the crowd physically reacts.
Do they lean in? Does the energy drop?
Exactly. That real-time analog feedback loop is impossible to simulate digitally. You can't get that insight from a Spotify streaming metric. The human element fundamentally refines the digital creation.
So the album is born in isolation, refined by the local community, and tested on a live crowd. But for the actual release, Record of Tides takes a massive pivot.
A very sharp turn.
He takes this deeply personal, locally polished project and hands it over to a purely remote international label. And he does it for a very specific, fiercely protective reason.
This marks a major transition in his career. Piotta officially retired from his longtime label, Kreisloft.org, in January 2026.
And for Intercelestial, he decided to team up with Ivo Petrov, the driving force behind the Bulgarian label, Mahorka.
And the origin of this partnership is actually pretty funny.
It is, because it wasn't some grand calculated strategy. Back in the spring of 2025, Piotta just casually offered Ivo an old compilation EP.
But Ivo completely rejected the idea of releasing old tracks. He demanded brand new material if it was going to be on Mahorka.
Which pushed Piotta. And he surprised himself by finishing the Intercelestial track so quickly in August, and they immediately locked in today's release date.
What stands out in Piotta's documentation of this process is the immense professional trust required to pull this off across international borders.
They've never actually met face-to-face.
Never. In fact, Piotta was experiencing so much anxiety about getting the physical release right that he shared this hilarious nightmare in his diary.
Oh, the Gelsenkirchen dream.
Yes. He dreamt that Ivo drove 10 hours straight from Bulgaria to his parents' old apartment in Gelsenkirchen just to hand deliver a batch of incredibly ugly cassette tapes.
Just imagining some exhausted guy standing at your door holding a box of hideous tapes is so incredibly specific.
It really highlights the anxiety of remote collaboration.
But the reality was the exact opposite of that nightmare. Piotta notes how meticulous and patient Ivo has been throughout the entire process.
Ivo even took Piotta's deliberately worn-look artwork and carefully adjusted the classic Mahorka rhombus design. He added these subtle outlines to the font just so the text would be perfectly readable without ruining the aesthetic.
It's a genuine collaboration built entirely over digital communication.
And that collaboration brings us to the centerpiece of this entire deep dive, the release format itself.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Yes, the album is available digitally as a name your price download. But the true anchor of Intercelestial is a highly limited physical run of exactly 50 audio tape cassettes.
And this is the paradox we teased at the very beginning.
Right. We were talking about an artist who makes futuristic post-genre electronic music. A guy who is obsessed with pushing boundaries. Why on earth would he lock his newest creation onto a piece of plastic and magnetic tape that most people associate with the 1980s?
The answer lies in the trauma of what Piotta calls the rented digital world.
Oh, this resonated with me so much.
It brings us back to his background as a multidisciplinary media artist. In his diaries, he expresses absolute fury about software companies transitioning entirely to subscription models and jacking up prices overnight.
He specifically calls out Cinema 4D, right?
Yes, a 3D rendering software he had utilized for 20 years to create his visual art. Suddenly, the pricing tripled.
Which is a massive issue across the entire creative industry right now. Software as a service. You don't buy a tool anymore. You rent the right to use it month by month.
Exactly. And Piotta realized that he was being forced to endlessly rent the very infrastructure of his creativity.
It's terrifying.
It is. If your bank account runs dry, or if you simply refuse to pay the extortionate new subscription fee, the software company locks you out. You lose access to your tools, your project files, and essentially your art. You own nothing.
The company holds the keys to your life's work. And if that realization hits you regarding your visual art, it's obviously going to trigger a protective mechanism for your audio art.
Naturally, you look at streaming platforms and realize the same thing is happening.
And you don't own the MP3s.
Yeah.
If the platform goes bankrupt, or if the algorithm decides to bury your artist profile, your music effectively ceases to exist for the public.
Which is why releasing a cassette in 2026 is an act of sheer rebellion.
It is about creating an undeniable physical anchor in reality. Artificial intelligence can rewrite algorithms, servers can crash, and software companies can price you out of your own studio. But none of them can remotely delete a plastic tape sitting on your bookshelf.
Exactly. It's forcing permanence into a totally impermanent ecosystem.
He's taking that ethereal, formless cloud we talked about at the start of the show and condensing it into a solid object you can hold in your hand.
And limiting it to just 50 copies makes it even more potent. It's an explicit rejection of digital abundance. It says, this is rare, this is real, you actually have to care for it.
Furthermore, the physical medium alters the message itself. You aren't just getting the same pristine, sterile digital file.
Right. Ivo Petrov actually noted that the album on tape sounds so nicely chunky and pumping, yet warm.
Because the magnetic tape naturally compresses the audio. It rounds off the harsh digital edges and grounds this highly futuristic IDM in a tangible analog warmth.
The medium becomes part of the music.
When you lay the whole story out, the journey of Interstellestial is just wild.
It really is a massive journey.
It begins as a subconscious, chaotic spark, triggered by the sensory deprivation of a Dutch beach. It gets hammered into shape and polished by the collaborative friction of the Ruhr electronic community.
Then it gets stress tested in front of a live, sweating crowd at Novembertronica.
And finally, it gets fiercely protected by a Bulgarian label, locked away safely on a limited run of 50 cassette tapes as a defense against a greedy, rented digital world.
It is a complete subversion of how the modern music industry demands artists behave.
And observing that subversion is incredibly empowering for you as a listener and creator. You don't need to be an electronic musician to appreciate the constellation of potential.
Absolutely not.
Whatever you do, knowing you have the skills to play the mainstream game, but actively choosing to create something meaningful on your own terms, that is the ultimate defense against burnout.
What?
You don't have to play by the algorithm's rules.
But it does leave us with a brilliant, lingering paradox. This raises an important question.
Oh, lay it on me.
A recent review of Interstellestial by NocoVision made a very specific point about Record of Tides as an entity. The reviewer noted that Piaida looks strictly to tomorrow, stating explicitly that he deeply despises nostalgia.
Right. He refuses to let his music get trapped in the past. Post-genre is inherently about breaking old rules to see what comes next.
Yet his ultimate weapon to protect this forward-thinking, futuristic vision from the volatility of the modern internet is a retro audio cassette.
Yeah.
It is a dying analog medium that Piaida jokingly noted in his diary he hadn't actually used since 2002 when he had an old Ford Fusion that lacked a CD player.
Wow. So the most futuristic statement he could possibly make required a relic from 2 decades ago just to survive.
It forces you to wonder about the trajectory of all digital art. In an increasingly ephemeral world where everything you create feels like it could vanish with a single server crash or subscription hike, is resurrecting the physical past the only true way to secure the future of our art?
That is a heavy question. It really makes you reconsider everything sitting on your hard drive right now.
It really does.
Well, we set out to explore how a highly digital artist used the physical world to protect his vision, and I think we found our answer. Thank you so much for exploring these sources with us today. We'll catch you on the next deep dive.